Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Ken Miller. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Miller specializes in pain and palliative care. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Dr. Chu and Dr. Miller are joined by Dr. Stuart Seropian, Associate Professor of Medical Oncology and an integral member of the Yale Cancer Center Leukemia, Lymphoma, and Myeloma Program. Dr. Seropian's clinical and research interests are in the area of stem cell transplantation.
All right, well, let's start off talking about what is a stem cell transplant, what's a bone marrow transplant, sort of the basics for us.
Sure. Well, a stem cell transplant, which I think nowadays is the preferred term, is a procedure whereby we use stem cells either from the blood or from the bone marrow in support of chemotherapy, often in high doses, to treat certain cancers, mostly hematologic malignancies or cancers of the blood, marrow, or lymph system.
And, there's a lot of talk about stem cells. So in controversy, are these the same as what we're reading about in the newspaper?
No, not really. And that's an important point, I think, to emphasize. We're talking about stem cells that are more grown up than the embryonic stem cells that you hear about a lot in the news nowadays. These are cells that make blood. They make the cells that are part of the immune system. They're not the kind of cells that there's any controversy about. These are cells that have been used for many, many years, more than 20 years, to support patients who have cancer.
And Stuart, again, where do these cells come from specifically?
Well, a lot of people are familiar with the term bone marrow transplant, which had its origins in the late 1960s and 1970s, and things have evolved to the point where a lot of the cells that we get out of the bone marrow for this procedure, we can now get out of the bloodstream. So it's more common to get these cells out of the bloodstream now, but many of them originate in the bone marrow.
And again, I guess the original concept of bone marrow transplantation was that it could be painful to get those cells out of the bone marrow. But I think with the new technology, really there's no pain involved.
Sure, it's easier to get the type of cells we need out of the bloodstream than it is to get them out of the bone marrow. So the experience for donors, if we're doing a transplant from a brother or sister, for instance, to a patient, is easier than it used to be. The methods are different, and there are sometimes side effects from the treatments, but donors don't have to go to the operating room and have multiple bone marrow aspirates under general or spinal anesthesia anymore.
A quick question for you. But if someone's considering being a donor, there's donor drives, throughout the state and elsewhere. What's involved? Do you go? Do you have to get blood? Do you have to have a physical exam if you want to consider being a donor?
Maybe before we launch into that we. Maybe I can give a little more background about the different kinds of transplants, because there are transplants where there are donors involved. Mm-hmm. And then there are also transplants where a patient is donating stem cells to themselves. So patients who have a disease like multiple myeloma, for instance, we've known for a long time that higher doses of chemotherapy can be more effective in treating the disease. But there are limits to the doses of chemotherapy we can administer because the blood counts drop and they take a long time to recover. We can harvest a patient's own stem cells out of the bloodstream and freeze them and then give the high doses of chemotherapy and give them their stem cells back, and their blood counts will get better in 9 or 10 days. Whereas without those stem cells, without that support, it might take 3 weeks or even longer, and that would be quite dangerous. So this is called an autologous transplant, and this is really just a safer way to give a more effective dose of chemotherapy to patients without as much in the way of side effects, discomfort, or risk to the patient. So an autologous transplant is a very commonly performed procedure, and the patient is donating to themselves.
Stuart, in follow-up to that, is there ever any concern that there may be some, minimal numbers of tumor cells that are in that collection of cells?
Sure. In fact, that's one of the reasons when we're trying to decide what kind of transplant we might perform, that we might switch to trying to get a different donor than the patient. So a patient who has a disease like leukemia, which is a disease of the blood and the bone marrow, that's a major concern. It was one of the original reasons why the other kind of transplant, allogeneic transplant, became popular. That's a transplant where we'll take a brother or sister's stem cells and use them to support the procedure. There are ways to look. For instance, if we were using a patient's own stem cells to support a transplant, to try and see if there are contaminating tumor cells in the graft, really probably the best way to know is the remission status of the patient. So in other words, a patient who gets chemotherapy and really has a good response and goes in remission, which is common in diseases like lymphoma or myeloma, then we know that we've reduced the burden of cancer in the body, and when we collect the stem cells, there aren't going to be a lot of tumor cells in there. In fact, the benefits of transplant using a patient's own stem cells for a disease like myeloma are with the understanding that sometimes there are tumor cells in there, but giving a higher dose of chemotherapy still benefits the patient.
All right. What other kind of, if we talk, let's stick with autologous now, but in terms of complications, I mean, is this a, how difficult a process is it for a patient?
Well, there certainly are side effects that are potential and risks that are possible when patients have high-dose chemotherapy, which is really the purpose of using a patient's own stem cells. It's a supportive way of giving high-dose chemotherapy. When we used to use bone marrow for that purpose, which in that setting, in the autologous setting, doesn't appear to work as well as using the stem cells out of the bloodstream. Patients had to have the procedure in the hospital. It could take 2 weeks or longer for the blood counts to get better. So patients got quite ill. The high-dose chemotherapy can irritate the lining of the mouth or the bowels. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. People lose their appetite. When the blood counts are low, fever or infection is possible.
Have you had anyone, if you've been able to do this procedure, autologous transplant, without their being admitted?
So with peripheral blood stem cells, which have really are the graft source that is used for autologous transplant, at Yale we don't admit people to the hospital unless they have a problem, whether they have a fever or if they're not feeling well after a transplant, we'll put them in the hospital quite readily. But this is an outpatient procedure at our institution and at many institutions now. So they're with the antibiotics that we have now, the supportive care, and the rapidity with which the blood counts get better using a patient's own blood stem cells, there isn't a clear reason why people have to have this procedure in the hospital.
And I think that's a very important point that you just raised, Stuart. We've certainly gotten a lot better in terms of the supportive care of patients who undergo intense chemotherapy and these autologous transplants.
We have much better antibiotics to prevent viral infections, bacterial infections, fungal infections. We have drugs like growth factors, like Neupogen or filgrastim. That's a medicine that really helps to speed up the recovery of the blood counts after transplant, which can make a big difference, even 3 or 4 days in terms of patients' white blood cell count recovering after this kind of procedure. It can get people feeling better more quickly. And it probably prevents a lot of our patients from ever being admitted to the hospital. Right now, after an autologous transplant, probably about half the patients will end up getting admitted to the hospital at some point, but half of them are just seen in our outpatient clinic, and they get fluids and antibiotics, and sometimes they need transfusions. But I think it's fair to say most patients really prefer not to be in the hospital for a long period of time if they can avoid it.
Now, when do you typically recommend an autologous transplant to a patient?
So there are, I think, pretty well agreed upon criteria for performing autologous transplant. I should emphasize that these procedures in general are for patients who have cancers of the lymph nodes, the blood, the bone marrow. So these are diseases like multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, Hodgkin's disease, rarely germ cell tumors, testicular cancer is an example. These are diseases that respond well to chemotherapy, and for patients who go into remission, where we know there's a very high risk of relapse at some point in the future, transplantation can help to either keep patients in remission longer or sometimes cure them. So some examples would be multiple myeloma. That's a illness where there's a lot of good drugs to get people in remission. There aren't standard therapies that cure patients of myeloma. Transplantation is often performed in first remission and has the benefit of keeping people in remission for a longer period of time when they don't have to take chemotherapy or other medicines. So that's an example. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a particularly large B-cell lymphoma, which is the most common type of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, is cured sometimes with standard therapy, but probably 40, maybe 50% of patients will have a relapse, and many of those patients are cured if they have a transplant in a second remission. So that's a typical indication for an autologous stem cell transplant.
So it sounds like for some patients it is a curative form of therapy, and for others it at least helps give them a longer remission.
That's right. And because the side effects and the risks of an autologous transplant have been reduced greatly over the last 10, 15 years, we are more likely to consider performing that procedure for patients. We really like to be doing this procedure when we're trying to cure a patient. But if we know we can transplant a patient and they can be off therapy for 1 year or 2 years because they've been through the transplant procedure, which is a 4 to 6 week commitment, then that's often the best thing for the patient.
Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to Yale to canceranswers@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and then please stay tuned to learn more information about stem cell transplantation with Dr. Stuart Seropian from the Yale Cancer Center.
Over 170,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer this year, and more than 85% of these diagnoses are related to smoking. The important thing to understand is that quitting, even after decades of use, can significantly reduce your risk of developing lung cancer. Each day, patients with lung cancer are surviving thanks to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care, and new treatment options are giving lung cancer survivors new hope. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers like the one at Yale to test innovative new treatments for lung cancer, and patients enrolled in these trials are given access to medicines not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and Dr. Stuart Seropian, who's an expert in stem cell transplantation at the Yale Cancer Center.
Stuart, before the break, we were talking about autologous transplants, and now maybe we can turn to the other transplant known as allogeneic stem cell transplantation. Maybe give our listeners out there kind of a very brief description of what that involves.
Sure. The same principle applies to allogeneic transplant as autologous transplant. We use stem cells to support the administration of chemotherapy. But there are a lot of differences. An allogeneic transplant is performed using a donor other than the patient. So ideally, a brother or sister who is matched for the genes that are important when we're giving cells from one individual to another. But sometimes the donor is a unrelated person, and the cells are obtained with the help of the National Marrow Donor Program. So these are a different kind of transplant in that we're treating malignancy in part by giving chemotherapy, but also by replacing the patient's blood and immune system with somebody else's. So in contrast to the autologous transplant, we're after the benefits of getting a new immune system in some cases, so that it may be a more powerful therapy. But because we're replacing the patient's immune system, this is a more complicated procedure.
Now, Stuart, you know, for other diseases and organ transplantation, we always hear about the concerns for long waiting lists and waiting times for someone to actually find a potential donor. Is that the same for bone marrow transplantation, stem cell transplantation?
It's a little different. The first place we look when we're looking for a donor for an allogeneic transplant is within the family. and it's brothers and sisters typically who are the eligible donors. It's really quite rare for a child or a parent of a patient to be a donor. It's not entirely unheard of, but the genetics of the HLA genes, which are the genes that are important, predict typically that it's only going to be a brother or sister who is matched. And if a brother or sister is matched, then transplant often can be performed very quickly. When we need to get a donor who's unrelated and we search through the National Marrow Donor Program, it can take longer. It typically takes somewhere in the order of 3 months to secure a donor. But the National Marrow Donor Program actually has made some advances in the way that typing is performed in patients in the registry, where sometimes we get grafts as quickly as 6 to 8 weeks.
Hmm. And what's the importance of looking at the underlying genetics and the HLA haplotypes?
Well, in order to perform a allogeneic transplant, we really have to have a donor who is matched at either all or 90% of the genes that we know are very predictive of the success of the transplant. So, unfortunately, patients often want to type a lot of friends. They want to type a lot of cousins. The genes are much more complex, and there are more of them in comparison, say, to the ABO blood system. You don't, in fact, need to be matched for your blood type with a donor because you're going to acquire the donor's blood type, but you really have to be matched for these genes. Our requirements that a patient and a donor have to be matched for 9 out of the 10 genes that we test for. Otherwise, the risks of transplant are really quite high.
So, Stuart, what's the role of the donor's immune system in trying to prevent the disease from coming back?
Well, I mentioned that's one of the things we try and take advantage of. And this is a little different depending on the disease that we are performing a transplant to try and eradicate. Chronic myelogenous leukemia, for example, which is an illness where transplant has been performed for many, many years, less commonly now because of some other new therapies. That's a disease where it's been well demonstrated that the major manner in which patients are cured is by donor lymphocytes killing the leukemic cells in the patient. We call that a graft versus tumor or graft versus leukemia effect. We know that the immune systems between a patient and a donor, unless we have an identical twin, are not really identical. So there are differences. We hope they are minor because we don't want to have complications if the donor's immune cells really react badly to the patient. But those differences probably account for donor cells recognizing leukemic cells in the body and killing them in many instances. This is a very strong effect for patients who have chronic myelogenous leukemia, but we think that effect is there for other leukemias and for lymphomas. So when we're trying to decide what kind of transplant to perform, we take into account a number of things. One of them is whether or not a patient's own stem cells could be contaminated with tumor cells, as Dr. Chu had asked earlier. But if a patient has a cancer that's not in a good remission, or we really think just giving the high-dose chemotherapy isn't going to do the trick, then we look for the extra benefit of the donor's immune system trying to eradicate the tumor cells.
And, sir, what are the types of diseases, patient types, that you'd consider for allogeneic transplant?
Similar hematologic malignancies. I think there's more in the way of acute leukemias where we tend to look to perform an allogeneic transplant as opposed to an autologous transplant, in part because we think there's more of a benefit of this graft versus tumor effect and also because those diseases really originate in the bone marrow and it's harder, I think, to eradicate tumor cells from a graft if we were to use the patient's own cells to try and support a transplant procedure. So similar diseases, really hematologic malignancies.
Really never think about using this for, colon cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer, which is a common question that I get in the clinic.
It's not a standard therapy because the graft versus tumor effect has been demonstrated in the hematologic malignancies. There are transplant programs that have done research asking the question, could this graft-versus tumor effect apply to solid tumors? And in fact, there is some evidence in certain diseases that that does occur. Renal cell cancer is the solid tumor where there's the most evidence of that. There are patients who've had this kind of transplant with renal cell cancer and have gone into remission where it clearly was the donor cells that did the trick. So there is research being done for renal cell cancer, for breast cancer. There's been some research for ovarian cancer also. I think that field, at least in terms of the solid tumors, is still in its infancy, and we haven't figured out how to really apply allogeneic transplant to those diseases effectively.
Stuart, we had an email question from George, who lives in Stamford, and he's saying, I'm 68 years old and I've got chronic myelogenous leukemia, and my doctors have talked about a transplant. Am I too old to get a transplant from a donor?
That's a good question. If you had gone back 10 or 15 years ago, the answer would have been yes. The age cutoff used to be, in some centers, 55 years of age, in others, 60 years of age. That's changed now. In fact, the oldest patient that we've transplanted in our program with an allogeneic transplant was 72. He's 76 now and doing well.
Right.
The reason that's changed is really because of our recognition of this graft versus tumor effect that goes along with allogeneic transplant. Once that was recognized, transplanters took a step back and said, well, if the graft can do a lot of the work, do we have to give the high doses of chemotherapy in the very beginning prior to giving the donor cells? The answer to that question appears clearly to be no, we don't have to do that. There are occasions where high-dose chemotherapy really is very important, but for older patients where that may be too risky, there are some newer chemotherapy drugs and other medicines that allow us to perform the procedure and give the donor cells and have them not be rejected because we know a little more about matching patients with donors and which chemotherapy drugs are good at suppressing the patient's immune system so they don't reject the cells. So we can get a graft from a brother or sister or an unrelated donor into a patient, even if they're older, with a sort of gentler treatment so that it's safe, and then hope for a graft versus tumor effect. And particularly a patient with CML, if they aren't doing well and all the wonderful new drugs there are for that disease, we would certainly consider it. There are certainly other issues, medical issues that apply to all patients that need to be investigated, but just on the basis of age, no.
Mm-hmm. Stuart, we're we're obviously quite proud of the fact that the Yale Cancer Center is the only accredited center here in the state of Connecticut that's performing allogeneic stem cell transplantation. And it's akin to having kind of the good housekeeping stamp of approval. And I was wondering maybe you could tell our listeners out there, you know, how were we able to get that accreditation designation? You know, how many transplants are we doing? And what's kind of the state-of-the-art research that you folks are doing in the transplant center?
Sure. The current version of the transplant program at Yale has been around since the mid-1990s. We perform over 100 transplants a year, around 120 to 130. A little more than half of them are the autologous transplant type. And then the balance are allogeneic transplants. We are accredited by the FACT, which is the Federation for the Accreditation of Stem Cell Therapy or Cell Therapy. And this is a national organization that inspects transplant programs and makes sure that we're following the standard safe policies and procedures, from top to bottom, really, in terms of the way we collect cells, the way we administer our therapies, the areas where our patients are taken care of, all the laboratory techniques. And that's a pretty rigorous inspection that occurs every 3 or 4 years. So we were accredited initially in 2003, I believe, and just got reaccredited recently.
Great.
And, in terms of research, what are some of the things that are interesting you now and that you're working on?
Well, in terms of allogeneic stem cell transplant, I mentioned the benefits of that type of procedure, the graft versus tumor effects. We didn't touch much on the potential side effects or risks of that yet. The benefits of getting a new immune system from a donor, we hope translate into a better outcome in terms of curing cancer. But there's also the possibility that the donor's immune cells can recognize the patient's tissues as different, and there can be reactions there. That's what graft-versus-host disease is all about. This is an illness that can occur after an allogeneic transplant. Going back to how we decide what kind of transplant we might perform for a patient, we have to keep in mind the risks of the side effects of both procedures. The extra benefits we might get from an allogeneic transplant can be offset by higher risks, and graft-versus-host disease is the most important complication when we consider those factors. This is an illness that can cause a rash. It could be relatively minor and treated readily, but it can also affect the bowels, the liver. A lot of our research is directed at trying to reduce those complications.
Stuart, if a patient or their family wants to learn more about bone marrow transplant, and if that may be something that they need, how do they contact the transplant program?
Well, they can get information on the Yale Cancer Center website. That's yalecancercenter.org. Or they can call 866-YALE-CANCER, which is, I think, the direct number to the Cancer Center.
Terrific. Stuart, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us.
Stuart, this has been great, and we look forward to having you on a future session to hear more about transplantation. Until next week, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller from the Yale Cancer Center wishing you a safe and healthy week.
If you have questions, comments, or would like to subscribe to our podcast, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you'll also find transcripts of past broadcasts in written form. Next week, we'll examine supportive care options for cancer patients.